Right. Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Preston Connor, and I will be the host for today's forum. This year, 2015, marks the 50th anniversary of the Hinckley Institute. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to engaging students in government and community and fostering a deeper understanding in policies and issues of the day. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 55 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $700,000 in scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is American Civics Education Initiative, and I'll now turn the time over to our guests. Jonathan Johnson will lead it out, and he'll introduce the rest of the panel.
Thank you, Preston. My name is Jonathan Johnson. My day job is I'm the chairman of Overstock.com, a local online retailer that's grown from 18 employees in 1999 to 1,700 Utah-based employees today. I also am the chair of the Civics Education Initiative in Utah. This is an effort that's being done nationwide to require high school students to pass the same U.S. civics test that immigrants pass when they want to become naturalized citizens. And I have with me today Senator Howard Stevenson, who is the sponsor of Senate Bill 60, which will be considered in the upcoming legislative session on this, and the House sponsor, Steve Ewelson. And so, Howard, why don't you start out and talk about the bill and why you think it's important?
Well, the bill requires students to take the 100-question test and pass it with getting at least 60 of the questions right. And we leave it up to the school system to decide how to administer that. A lot of people assume that it's going to require a special class, that we're taking over a credit of high school credit that students are going to have to dedicate for this purpose, and that's not accurate. If students don't have the answers to these questions as a part of their general education, then we're in trouble regarding the quality of general education. So there's no special class, there's no special training, but what we're finding is that nationwide we have citizens who don't know even the form of government we are living under. They can't name prominent government officials. They can't name the first three words of the Constitution. They can't even identify that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. They don't know the three branches of government and why they are three. And so we have a nation of people who don't understand our form of government. And therefore, I wonder if we're bound to lose it if we don't even know why we have it and why it's important to understand the form of government we live under as we go into the voting booth.
Good. Thank you. Representative Ewelson, why don't you talk about your interest in this and then maybe some of the work you've done with the state school board to talk to them about this.
Sure. So a recent Annenberg public policy poll showed that only 38% of citizens surveyed can name all three branches of government. The survey also showed that about 17% of those surveyed could name the Chief Justice, John Roberts, of the Supreme Court, while about 27% could name some of the judges on American Idol. So given those basic statistics or questions, it's evident that we have a problem. That was further emphasized to me when I was at a parent-teacher conference this past fall, and I talked to one of my students' social studies teachers, and this is a middle school, and she didn't know I was in the legislature. And I told her, I said, have you heard that some guy from the legislature is sponsoring a bill that would require students to pass the Immigration and Naturalization Service test? She says, I heard that. And she says, I don't know if I could pass that test. And I've heard from a number of other civics teachers who think it's actually a really good idea. And so I think that it's imperative that our society train our young people to know the basics of civics education. I believe it was Benjamin Franklin when he was leaving the Constitutional Convention, and a lady asked him, what type of government have you given us? And Benjamin Franklin replied, a republic, if you can keep it. And I think having first a base knowledge of it, as well as citizen active engagement, is the fundamentals of keeping our republic. Looking at our voter turnout rates that continue to fall, it's terribly troubling. We don't profess that this is going to be a silver bullet to fix our level of civic engagement by our citizens, but the hope is they will at least come out with a more basic understanding of these fundamental concepts. It's the proverbial, you get what you measure, you fix what you measure, you are what you measure. So we're proposing that we do a very basic measurement.
And what's the response from the state school board then?
I presented this to the state school board, and generally it seems to be supportive. They've not yet taken a position on the bill, but several members have come out in public support of the resolution, and I intend to see if there's actually a majority that support it. I think that there will be. But at the end of the day, I think the bill will pass with a very high approval rating in terms of votes in the legislature, and hopefully our school districts and school board will get behind it also.
Good. Thank you. So one of the things that I would note is that, as Representative Eielson mentioned, voter participation is down, and it's down every election kind of year over year over year. And that's frustrating. And the group that has the demographic that has the lowest voter participation are those newly minted voters, 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, folks that have just graduated from high school. Part of the aim of this bill is to make sure that people in high school understand how civics works, including their role in government, to know how, if they participate, what that means. And I think if that happens, we're hoping to see more people participate in government by knowledge. You know, it's hard to force people to do something. When you teach them how it works, they're much more likely to be involved. I'd also just comment a little bit on the pass rates of these tests. When immigrants take this test to become naturalized citizens, they have a 92% pass rate. Now, there's been a couple states where they've done these tests to high school students, Oklahoma and Arizona, and there they found that high school students had just a 4% pass rate. Now, I'm confident, or at least hopeful, that pass rate would be better in Utah were we to test today. But even if it's a little better, it's not satisfactory. So that's the reason for this initiative. And like Senator Stevenson said, there's no new materials that are required for the schools to implement. The test exists. The federal government has put the test together for immigrants. Study materials exist. In fact, study materials exist in about 50 different languages because it's set up for people that have come here to study. And there's no requirement to the schools of how to administer the test or what grade to administer it in. That's a decision we'd like to have the school districts and the local schools decide. If they want to administer it as part of their U.S. history class or if they want to administer it online and let people take it like they do when they're working to get their driver's permit, that would be acceptable. If they'd like to pass out a piece of paper test and have them take it there, that's fine. It's really up to the schools to figure out how to do this. Is it the ultimate solution to more participation? Clearly not, but it's a step. You know, one of the things I know Senator Stevenson thinks that a 60% pass rate is, or 60% to pass rate is a woefully low percentage. But
yeah.
It's a place to start. Anything else you want to say on that?
Well, I think we can't overstate how critical this ignorance crisis is in our country. It cannot be overstated that we have a citizenry that don't know the form of government or why we have it. They don't understand the principles behind the Declaration of Independence and what it even means to be created equal or to be endowed by their creator with inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They're just words to folks, and it seems to me that if we have citizens who don't understand, for example, the meaning of rule of law, you know, it's one thing to understand that rule of law is the fundamental reason our economy is better than other economies in the nation, because capital is safe here. Because it can't be taken by government. It can't be taken by robber barons or by mafia. That in order for government to take property from us, there has to be a process, a rule of law, or for someone to sue us for our property or our capital. The reason the United States economy is so much better than Latin America is not because they're not hardworking people. It's because they don't have the protections of rule of law. And so that's one of the questions. And if our students, if our citizens don't know those things, this nation is in terrible trouble. And I don't know how long it can last. You know, it was said by a patriot long ago that every nation has to win our freedom anew.
Every generation
yeah. has to win freedom anew. And the way we win that is to understand what those who died for that liberty, why they died for it, what the principles were they were willing to give their lives for, what the signers of the Declaration of Independence were willing to pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor for. If we don't have that same passion, I fear for our future.
Yeah. Representative Eelson, how do you think the legislature would fare taking this test?
You know, actually driving up here today, I thought about this thing about the logistics of administering the test to the legislature, and I'm actually going to see if we can arrange for that, maybe through a SurveyMonkey online poll. I actually think they would, this may sound self-serving, but mm-hmm. I think they would pass with flying colors because that is our business. Some of the details of, you know, how many seats are in the U.S. House of Representatives, you know, I think there's definitely an order of the importance of those 100 questions. It's if somebody can describe the three branches of government and understand the benefits of that versus is it 435 or 437, you know, seats in the House, you know, there's a difference there. But we'll see how many will take it. I'm not sure if I can't certainly compel them to do it, but... you know, one point I wanted to make, and people say, well, why is this such a crisis? I think that if you look at standardized tests from, you know, the ACT, the SAT, and SAGE, all these different tests, we don't test civics knowledge. It is just, it's fallen through the cracks over the past decades. And so schools generally teach to what, you know, they're tested to. And so this is an attempt, and this is not just something we're doing in Utah. Of course, this is a nationwide goal to get all 50 states on board by 2017, which is the 230th anniversary of the Constitution. And so hopefully nationwide this can pick up steam, and we can put the importance back into this absolutely critical component of our society.
Yeah. Senator Stevenson.
You know, I attended a National Conference of State Legislatures meeting where they were focusing on civic education. And they had three scholarly panelists who were describing the kinds of things that we've been talking about, the lack of understanding and the importance of it. And they were talking about general civic education in our high schools and in our colleges, and in K-12 for that matter. And I, during the question and answer period, I asked them, I said, we're intending to require Utah students to pass the U.S. immigration test. And I asked them their opinion. And they said, all three of them said, they support that. They think it's a good idea. They say the previous test was kind of not as robust. It was less meaningful and more trivia than substance. But they said this new test, which we've had for a few years now, is really a good indicator of basic knowledge that every American citizen should know.
Yeah. I'd like to comment, I don't think this is really a partisan initiative. The Salt Lake Valley has a Council of Mayors that meets every month. Salt Lake, Conference of Mayors of Salt Lake Valley is what it's called. And it's the 18 mayors that preside over municipalities and the county in the Salt Lake Valley. So everyone from Mayor Becker in Salt Lake and Mayor McAdams in Salt Lake County to Mayor Applegarth down in Riverton and Mayor Walker in Draper. And I went and presented to them back in November about this initiative, and they enthusiastically endorsed this. And at their December meeting, each signed a unanimous resolution supporting this initiative. And I know that Mayor Dolan and Sandy made this the topic of his newsletter in December. So it's not partisan. I think folks on both sides of the aisle support it. And it's rolling out in state after state. There are currently, I think, 15 or 18 state legislatures that are looking at it in their current session. Arizona, which just opened its legislative session, had this pass as the first bill of the new year. And it's been signed into law by the governor in Arizona. So would that we were first, but perhaps we'll be second in line. So love to take questions, answer any concerns. Please, tell us your name.
I'm Aline Brown. I'm a non-traditional
student. Sorry.
As a reminder, state your name and speak clearly into the microphone. Okay.
I'm Aline Brown, and I'm a non-traditional student here at the U. And while I do not think this is a bad idea, I would question the thought process in allowing each individual school district to administer this test as they see fit. Other laws that have been passed, such as the speed limit, whatever, Summit County enforces it the same as Salt Lake County, as does, you know, all the counties in the state. But with this law, you're looking at allowing the school districts to enforce it any way they want, basically. They can have a written test. They can do it with technology. If you're going to standardize this, I think it should be standardized throughout. Could you please explain to me why you're not thinking that way?
Sure. Let me take a first cut at it. It doesn't preclude standardization. I think it really lets the state school board take this directive from the legislature and say, okay, we have a new requirement. What's the best way for us to do it? In my personal opinion, I think school is done closest to the individual, closest to the home. And the less that we can be dictating from the legislature, the better. Frankly, I think a solution will emerge that will become a statewide solution. I think someone will step up and create an online test like we have for getting your driver's permit, and that's what schools will want to do. But rather than dictate what everyone does, it's provide a principle, provide a threshold and then let it go forward.
Yeah, this doesn't prohibit a uniform method. It simply puts it in the hands of the education experts, those who are elected to represent the state on the state school board, rather than the legislature dictating how that test is going to be given. We would rather have them form those regulations.
A little bit of an alternate point of view. I would say, actually, in some ways, this is the most prescriptive test that's ever been prescribed by the legislature, because we're telling them exactly what questions they have to ask and what score they must obtain. With all other tests, we never tell them details of when, where, or how. You know, we have lots of qualified people in our districts that are, you know, trained in those types of details. And so the goal here, though, is not to trick students and, you know, like tests that students up here may study for. You're never quite sure what's going to be on the test. This is, the questions and answers are all there for them, you know, before. When I was a teenager, I passed the private pilot's test, and the FAA published 1,000 questions with all the answers. So I just memorized all the questions and all the answers, and it was easy to pass the test. It's a lot easier when you know what you're going to be tested on, and our hope with only 100 questions that they'll be able to figure it out and pass it with flying colors.
So, Representative Eielson, some have said that memorization isn't learning. And I'm curious about your comment on the private pilot's lesson. You memorized. You felt like you learned.
I do. I mean, of course, being able to integrate facts and figures and into the daily practice of whatever you're doing is a different skill set, but having the base knowledge, mm-hmm. I would argue, is critical for anything. And so if you can't describe the three branches of government, how are you going to talk about the interaction and collaboration between, you know, two branches of government if you can't even describe what they are? So, you know, that's one point of view, but it's not one I say it's good, better, best.
Good. Thanks, Senator.
The content knowledge that we're requiring does not presume that you can make an argument about political philosophy. We're just taking that left brain part, saying you have to know, you have to have this content knowledge. But the right brain is far more important when you have classroom discussions, as I hope we're having in all of our civics and history and government classes, about political philosophy, about application, about the significance of these historical events. This is just a foundation to then give teachers the greater opportunity to engage students in meaningful discussions about it involving the right side of the brain. Because that's where we really get the powerful arguments and opinions expressed and that kind of thing. But if we don't all have a basic foundation of these 100 questions, how do you expect to have a cogent argument or cogent discussion on political philosophy and values and those kinds of things? Because that's what I'm hoping this will stimulate, is that if we have this foundation of knowledge, we can have better discussions about the meaning of current affairs, for example.
Other questions? Yeah, please.
My name is Madison Mahone, and I was wondering, what are the consequences, or is it up to the school districts, on if they fail the exam?
So the consequence is a student can't graduate without having passed the exam, and they have to get 60% to pass. The school can administer it, or a student can take it as many times as they want. So it's not, you have a bad day, your K-12 education goes down the drain. We want people to pass it. We want them to learn these facts. So it doesn't require people to take it once, but everyone will have to pass to graduate from high school.
It's similar to the driver's license test. Yeah. Take it as many times as you want. I failed my driver's test 3 times in a row, and they said, son, you need to go home and study.
What an admission. But you passed your aviation test.
And I'd already passed the aviation test when I flunked my driver's license. And then I found out they'd give me the truck driving test. So the moral of the story is you can take it as many times as you want, and if you need to go home and study, great. That's what we want to have happen.
Please.
Hi, my name is Molly. I was wondering, this is probably some basic knowledge I should know, what percentage do immigrants need to receive on the test to be able to become citizens? And are we holding our students to that same standard? And if not, why?
I believe it's a higher rate for the immigrants. I think it's a 70% pass rate. But the way that this is rolling out nationally is to try and get it at 60%. You know, my hope is that this will pass in the 2015 legislative session, and then we can revisit it after it's been implemented and say, I mean, candidly, if it's a test you can take over and over again, I'm not sure 100% isn't the right number, or 90% isn't the right number.
When immigrants take the test, they know all 100, right, but they're asked 10 of them, and they have to get 7 of the 10 correct. And it's an oral test for them. And this would just be more of a written or an online or however the state school board determines it to be administered, but it will be all 100 questions.
Good. Question over here.
Hi, my name is Cindy Chen. I was wondering in your presentations that you've given, what are some of the common criticisms that you've gotten? Because it sounds like you've gotten a lot of support, but what is some of the negative feedback that you've gotten?
I can start with that, because we've received quite a bit, especially from teachers of U.S. government and civics, who argue that we are... That this test doesn't really represent the kind of higher level of thinking that ought to be engaged in when we have civics discussions and tests. And we're leaving that to the school system to have that. AP U.S. History is a great course, for example, or has been. It's under criticism now, too, because it's been revised, but those higher levels of discussion and more critical thinking questions we're not replacing that at all. A lot of them who criticize this say assume that we're doing this to replace something. We're not. We're not affecting anything that's currently being taught. What we are doing, though, is saying that as a minimum for graduation, you need to understand these questions and pass at a 60% rate. A lot of the criticism comes from misunderstanding this, thinking that this is going to require a whole new curriculum, it's going to require new high school courses. It does none of that.
Steve?
One of the criticisms I received is that why would we wait until 12th grade to make the students learn this knowledge? They said this should be knowledge that they have mastered by eighth grade, because then it'll serve them through U.S. history and civics courses. And, it's a valid comment. The good news is that we simply say by the time that they pass, graduate from high school, I administer it to my children who are in elementary, middle school, and high school, and college, actually. And they all passed with, far above 70%. So that's a criticism. Another one is that we're testing our students too much as it is, and this is just another test, which is a valid point. The good news, though, is that this test doesn't have to be developed by anybody in the state. There's no fee to purchase the test like there are for other standardized tests. And if they want to somehow, take the test at home or after school or whatever, that's all up for the State Board of Education or local districts to determine. So I think the last criticism was that, we need to focus more on integration and that, this is just so base. Well, the good news is it's not mutually exclusive with all those additional principles. I mean, that argument on prima facie I can reject, because we're simply saying we just want to make sure you know some basic facts and figures as you move into those advanced topics.
Criticism that I've heard is some are concerned that it looks and feels like Common Core, that we're taking a federal exam and pushing it down to the states. This is very different than that. This is a test which exists. It's not a set of principles. It's 100 questions. I think that's different. And if at some point the federal government takes this test and tweaks it to a place that Utah doesn't like, Utah can come up with a test that looks and feels more like this one. So I'm not overly concerned that we're asking our Utah students to take something that's put together by the federal government.
I don't know if any of you ever attended a swearing-in ceremony of new immigrants, but it's really a moving experience. I attended that event in the Rose Wagner Theater downtown, and as it happened, the judge was 1.5 hours late, and still those immigrants didn't care. Now, there were no complaints. They were just so excited to give that oath and receive their citizenship. And it was such a moving experience. And I've often wondered, wouldn't it be wonderful if each citizen had a point in their lives when they really had that same feeling about this nation, or hopefully multiple times in their lives when they feel the amazing gift it is to be a citizen of this great nation, which holds that all men are created equal, and that we are all to be protected in our property rights and in our abilities to make our lives better on our own. You know, it was interesting, though, at the conclusion, though, because by the time we were done, it was about 2.5, maybe it was 3 hours. And there were a lot of hugs and embracing, and people lingered. And as new citizens, the first thing they were to be confronted with as they went outside was to find a parking ticket on each of their window shields because their meters had run out because the judge was late. And I thought, how ironic that is. In fact, I called the mayor and I said, is there any way that you could give a reprieve for each of these people? In fact, I chased down the meter maid. And I said, do you have any idea what you just did? But I guess it was an initiation into rule of law.
Well, I've attended several of those. And I've just last September, on Constitution Day, I went to one that was held at This Is the Place State Park. Felt like an appropriate place for people to be swearing in because they had chosen America and Utah as their place. And what happens is after the swearing-in ceremony, there's some patriotic talks, and then they have an open mic for the new citizens, the naturalized citizens, to kind of tell their story and why they came to America and why they wanted to become citizens. And many of them comment on the test and how they studied for it and how they're so proud that they passed. The other thing I just note from the ceremony I went to, it was presided over by a federal district court judge from Provo, Judge Sam. Judge Sam is one of 11 children of Romanian immigrants who came to the United States, became citizens, and when his father came, he wanted to be an American so much that he changed his last name from a long, hard-to-pronounce Romanian name to that of Uncle Sam. So Judge Sam, his surname is after Uncle Sam. Anyway, other questions? Chris?
So I believe it was Thomas Jefferson that said, an educated citizenry is vital to our survival as a free people. Now, the civics education test seems like it's one step towards fulfilling that requisite. What other initiatives would you suggest to help ensure that our students are civically educated and civically engaged?
Thoughts?
Wow, that's a thoughtful question. Because it really speaks to the fact that this is just a foundation.
Yeah.
You know, Thomas Jefferson also said, I know of no safe depository of the power of governments, of the government, but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise that power with a wholesome discretion, the answer is not to take it from them, but to inform and educate their discretion. And that's what we're doing. We're creating a foundation of knowledge so that hopefully there will be greater discussions on the things you mentioned.
It's a very valid question, and it's akin to one I've asked myself for years. I've passed a lot of voting-type bills, and one of which was to create allow mail-in elections to be conducted completely by mail-in ballot, which about a quarter of the counties in the state have adopted that method now, and voter participation is actually up quite a bit. But as I've looked at other ways to move the needle, the problem is that we, as a legislature, we can only do so much. We can't force. I mean, we'll start violating the principles that are so fundamental to us to try to force people to become engaged. I love the quote up here on the back wall. It says, our young best minds must be encouraged to enter politics, from Robert Hinckley, the founder of the Hinckley Institute of Politics, which, to me, there's a difference between being an active citizen and then stepping into the fire to run for office or to, you know, get on the local school board, which, you know, we're probably preaching to the choir in this environment, but hopefully we can engage young people to get involved in that political process instead of just, you know, backing away saying, oh, that's somebody else's job.
And Chris, I ultimately think this is something that's best done at home and in small communities. You know, when Representative Eielson said that he gave this test to his children, elementary school to college, I've done the same. And we walked through and talked about the answers, not so they can just get the facts. You know, I watched the State of the Union with my kids last night, and we talked about it afterwards and what they liked and what they didn't like and who the people were there and why the Supreme Court justices sit and don't stand and applaud like everyone else does at alternating times. This is really a responsibility of parents and community leaders. I'm not sure a lot needs to be dictated from the legislature.
Hi, so I have another question. So we've been talking a lot about immigrants, and I was wondering how you think this exam and implementation of this exam would affect people in the public education system that aren't citizens, because we have students in the system that aren't citizens, or that they come from families where their parents might not understand and watch the State of the Union address on a daily basis. And do you think that this bill could lead to roll into further discussion about immigration reform and how that there might be implications there?
You know, I had somebody else ask that question, a reporter from Michigan, when I think this is being proposed, saying, is this an anti-immigrant test? And the answer to that is, that's absolutely not the purpose. It's to have people living here who are who can participate better understand it. I think whether someone's a citizen or not, coming through our schools on taxpayer-funded education, it's wholly appropriate for them to understand how the system works. And it's not so onerous that it will be hard for those that aren't citizens or that are whose parents aren't citizens that they can't pass. Again, the test, the study guides to the tests are in, you know, dozens of different languages, and immigrants working to become naturalized citizens pass at a very high rate.
You know, that's a very thoughtful question. I hadn't even thought about what this might do to induce people to become citizens, or to want to become citizens more than perhaps they were. We know that there are undocumented persons in the United States in great numbers, because the United States has allowed them to be here, and I don't see that they are they're seekers of liberty and freedom. That's why they crossed the border. They want to be part of this American dream, and I it's unfortunate about the way our nation doesn't provide a process by which they can be here legally and enter legally, because we aren't offering enough worker visas and that kind of thing. But the fact is they're here, and they're here in great numbers, and they are required, states are required by the federal government to ensure that each of their children are enrolled in our public school system. And when those children become high school students and they're playing by the rules, they ought to have the opportunity to attend college without having to pay an in-state or an international tuition rate, which is would basically bar them from attending college. I was sponsor of the Utah's Dream Act, the Senate sponsor. Representative Dave Ure was the House sponsor. And we are one of the first states to have enacted that. And I'm glad we did, because it basically tells those students, if you play by the rules and you attend high school and you graduate, you are entitled to attend college at in-state tuition rates, rather than being told, no, you are barred from college. You have to sit on the back of the bus and tell those girls, for example, that you might as well get pregnant because you're not going to be able to attend college. You have no future. Or to those boys, you might as well join a gang because you're not like our children. Even though you may be a student body officer, you may be captain of the soccer team, you may be a cheerleader, but so what? We're not going to allow you to attend here. I'm proud of the fact that Utah is one of those states that has made sure that we recognize that all men are created equal and we're giving them equal opportunity.
As we approach the bottom of the hour, I want to first thank Senator Stevenson and Representative Eielson. You know, whenever I've approached somebody to sponsor a bill and to help on it, I know that I'm asking them to devote significant time to something that's important to me. And they have worked hard on this bill. They've come to forums like today. They've spoken in front of the state school board. They've done media interviews. It's taken time, and we haven't even got to the legislative session. There'll be work to do to get done. So I'm very appreciative of them that they think enough of this idea, not just to consider voting for it, but to be the Senate and the House sponsors to champion to make it happen. I'm also thankful to the Hinckley Institute of Politics for having us here today to talk about it. This is a great organization. I've met a lot of Hinckley Institute people as I've been on Capitol Hill, both here in Salt Lake and in Washington. You place your people well, you're doing good things, you're being civically minded and active civically. So thank you for coming today, and thanks for hosting us.